Let's go ahead and open our Bibles today to 1 Kings chapter number 18. 1 Kings chapter number 18, where we are looking at the northern kingdom of Israel under that horrible king Ahab and his wife Jezebel, and the ministry of the prophet Elijah during that kingdom. This is all happening more than 70 years after the split of northern Israel away from southern Judah. And the northern kingdom is completely committed to the official worship of Baal, the thunder and lightning god of the Middle East, and his wife consort, Asherah, the fertility goddess, the goddess of grain. So I refer to Baal and Asherah as the false gods of rain and grain. But God sent Elijah, his prophet, to Ahab and told him that the real God of rain and grain was going to stop both of them until further notice. And Elijah ended up spending the next 3.5 years hiding out first in the wilderness on the east side of the Jordan River, being fed by birds and drinking from the brook or the wet weather stream that was there until it all dried up. Then God had him go and meet with a widow of a suburb of Sidon, place called Zarephath, which would be kind of the home territory of Queen Jezebel. And this woman faithfully fed him and housed him for what remained of the 3.5 years, and did so miraculously because of her faith in God. Now it's time for the rains to begin again, and for Ahab to learn very clearly that the only God of rain and grain is He who is the God of Israel and the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, the Creator God of Scripture. So chapter number 18 of 1 Kings says, "After many days, the word of He who is came to Elijah in the third year, saying, 'Go, show yourself to Ahab, and I will send rain upon the earth.'" Now we have testimony from elsewhere that we're talking about a total of 3.5 years from the last rain until the rain that occurs in this story. Verse 2, "So Elijah went to show himself to Ahab. Now the famine was severe in Samaria." Now I think that's a reference to the city of Samaria, although the entire territory starts being called by that name during history. "So Elijah went to show himself to Ahab. Now the famine was severe in Samaria, and Ahab called Obadiah, who was over the household." Now Obadiah feared He who is greatly. And when Jezebel cut off the prophets of He who is, Obadiah took 100 prophets and hid them by 50s in a cave and fed them with bread and water. Now, I made reference to this guy in a previous session, that when Ahab, at Jezebel's prompting, because she's the stronger personality of the two, that the worship of He who is, the God of southern Judah, the God of the temple down in that part of the region, that worship should be totally eradicated in their kingdom, and that only Baal and Asherah should be worshipped. And so anybody that is promoting the worship of the true God gets whacked at this time by Jezebel, gets arrested and executed. Well, this guy, Obadiah, and by the way, that those last few letters in our English spelling here, I-A-H, that's the shortened form of God's divine name, He who is. So Obadiah, he is a true worshiper of the true God. Now, why does he not get eradicated? Apparently, Ahab sees him as indispensable in the work of this kingdom. So he's kind of a protected person. But what Ahab doesn't know, what Jezebel doesn't know, is that when this crackdown against the true faith started, Obadiah grabbed 100 of the true prophets and secreted them away somewhere nearby. And he's been feeding them out of the royal supplies during the famine, during the time of the drought. And that is going to be important in his claim later that he's on Elijah's side. Verse number 5. Ahab said to Obadiah, "Go through the land to all the springs of water, to all the valleys. Perhaps we may find grass and save the horses and mules alive and not lose some of the animals." 3.5 years without rain has led to failed harvests. And failed harvests mean you can't feed your animals because you got to focus on the people. And so here in this tail end of the famine, they're having to make hard choices. And so Obadiah is tasked by Ahab to help him survey the water sites throughout the area to see if there's still some places where they might be able to feed and graze their animals that they'd prefer not to kill, not to take out of their inventory. Verse 6, so they divided the land between them to pass through it, and Ahab went in one direction by himself, and Obadiah went in another direction by himself. So that kind of speaks to his high rank in Ahab's kingdom and in Ahab's idea of how important he is. So as Obadiah was on the way, behold, Elijah. Now again, that J-A-H at the end, that's the name of God in shortened form. And Eli is the Hebrew way of saying my God. So Elihu or Eliyahu, Elijah's name means Yah is my God. So he who is my God. The true God is my God. So his name represents the point of contention here. The kingdom of northern Israel is claiming that Baal is their God, while the true God is he who is. All right, so Elijah meets up with the righteous Obadiah. So Obadiah recognized him and fell on his face and said, "Is it you, my Lord Eliyahu?" So these guys know each other from the past because they share the same faith. And even though we've talked about the full record of Elijah's ministry, starting at the beginning of the famine, it is clear that he was a prophet of God previous to that, that he'd been ministering previous to that in such a way that Obadiah recognizes him as a significant person. So he says, "It's you?" And he answered, "It is I. Now go, tell your Lord, behold, Elijah is here." And Obadiah said back, "How have I sinned that you would give your servant into the hand of Ahab to kill me? As he who is your God lives, there is no nation or kingdom where my Lord has not sent to seek you." And when they would say, "He's not here," he would take an oath of that kingdom or nation that they had not found you. So this is where we understand that Ahab and Jezebel have been desperately seeking for Elijah for the last 3.5 years. Now, why have they been looking for him? Because he made it very clear that until he speaks the words, this rain drought will not end. And so they were hoping they could find him and force him to say the, I'm going to use this word advisedly here, the magical words, the words of the incantation that would bring the water back online again. And then no doubt they would have killed him. But they've searched everywhere over the kingdom of Israel, couldn't find him. They've checked in with all the neighboring kingdoms, and they've all been forced to take an oath saying, we swear to you by our gods, he's not here. We're not harboring him here. And so that's what Obadiah is saying, is they've looked for you everywhere in the last 3 years. And now, verse 11, you say, go tell your Lord, behold, Elijah is here. As soon as I've gone from you, the spirit of he who is will carry you, I don't know where. And so when I come and tell Ahab and he cannot find you, he'll kill me, unless I, your servant, have feared, although I, your servant, have feared he who is from my youth. Now remember again, we're 70 years plus into the kingdom of northern Israel. So this man has certainly been born since the kingdom split. So his family were part of those that believed in the true and living God and communicated that faith to him, and he's grown up in it. And now he's afraid that Elijah is going to get him killed, because God's going to protect Elijah, keep him from being killed by Ahab. So if he tells Ahab, hey, Elijah's over here, by the time they get back there, Elijah will be gone, and Ahab will cease to see the importance of keeping Obadiah around and kill him. Now, verse 13, has it not been told, my Lord, what I did when Jezebel killed the prophets of he who is? How I hid 100 men of he who is his prophets by 50s in a cave and fed them with bread and water? So he brings it up saying, you know I'm on your side. I'm on God's side because I've risked everything protecting 100 of your fellow prophets, people you worked with. I've been feeding them from the royal stores during a famine. If I get caught, I'm a dead man. So why are you now going to put my neck in a noose? Verse 14, now you say, go tell your Lord, behold, Elijah is here. He's going to kill me. And Elijah said, as he who is of the hosts. Now, the Hebrew here is it is Yahweh Sabaoth. It's he who is over the armies. And it is a military title for God that is used a lot during this time period of Israeli history. It is a reminder he is the commander-in-chief of the heavenly armies, as well as the armies of Israel. So as he who is over the armies lives, before whom I stand, I will surely show myself to him today. So he makes an oath, a promise to Obadiah in the name of God. I am not going to disappear. This is all from God. I have to talk to Ahab face to face. So Obadiah went to meet Ahab and told him, and Ahab went to meet Elijah. And when Ahab saw Elijah, Ahab said to him, is it you, you troubler of Israel? So he blames Elijah for all of the famine, all of the drought, all of the disaster that Israel is under at this exact moment. But of course, that's not the truth. He answered back, I've not troubled Israel, but you have, and your father's house, because you've abandoned the commandments of he who is and followed the Baalim, that is, the multitude of idols that are devoted to Baal, the thunder and lightning god, scattered all over the nation of northern Israel. So Ahab's the problem, not Elijah. Verse 19, he now proposes what God wants done. Now, therefore, send and gather all Israel to me at Mount Carmel, and the 450 prophets Baal and the 400 prophets of Asherah who eat at Jezebel's table. So he says, I want you to bring the full complement of the prophets of Baal and Asherah, your leading religious leaders, the top crop of those that promote your faith, and meet me up on Mount Carmel. Now, Mount Carmel is actually a ridgeline that stretches from the Mediterranean coast, and you can actually see it on a map of Israel. It's the bump that goes out into the Med. That's the northwest end of Mount Carmel, and it stretches about 20-some miles to the southeast, and it depends on how you count it. Megiddo might actually be part of this ridgeline as well. There's a little pass, a couple of little passes that happen in this ridgeline that have cities attached to them, Megiddo being one of them. But this is a mountain ridge. I think at its high point, it's like 1,800 feet, something of that nature. And it's heavily wooded, and it apparently was the place where one of the altars of the true and living God were set up during the time that northern Israel was completely cut off from southern Judah. And the people who did worship the true and living God were barred from crossing the border to go to the temple for worship. And so they met instead at places like Carmel and offered sacrifices to the true and living God. So Elijah may have ministered at this site before. So he tells Ahab, meet me there. So Ahab sent to all the people of Israel and gathered the prophets together at Carmel. And Elijah came near to all the people and said, so now we're at the worship site and we've got a whole bunch of the Israelis, not every single person in the population, but rather a big group of them from this area. And we've got the 450 prophets of Baal and the 400 prophets of Asherah. And there is Elijah now addressing this large gathering, many thousands of people, perhaps tens of thousands of people. And he said, how long will you go limping between two different opinions? Now, there's a play on some words here. Later in the passage, the dancing procession of the prophets of Baal and Asherah will be referred to by this same word, limping along. So somehow they did this little skippy, drag your feet, then leap sort of dance as part of their worship ceremony. I think it might have been a little bit related to something that happened with the worship of the god Dagon amongst the Philistines, because Dagon is somehow tied in with the worship of Baal as well. When the Ark of the Covenant had been taken to Philistine territory and put in the house of Dagon, the temple of Dagon, Dagon's statue fell and bowed before it on the first occasion. On the next occasion, he bowed down and broke off his hands and his head on the threshold of the worship area. And we were told at that time that thereafter, the worshipers of Dagon jumped over the threshold of any building that they went through because stepping on that crack somehow insulted Dagon. So I wonder whether or not some of that has gotten into the worship of Baal, and they do a little bit of leaping at certain points in their procession as part of that leaping over the threshold thing. Don't know that for sure, but I'm just going to throw it out there that they've got this weird dance step that they do when they worship the god Baal and Asherah. But it becomes kind of a play on words for him to say, how long are you going to leap between these two opinions? You're playing both sides of the fence here, because apparently a lot of the Israelis were. They kind of wanted to worship the god of their history, the god who brought their ancestors out of Egypt and brought them into the promised land and all of that, he who is. They kind of wanted to worship him some, but they also wanted to be in compliance with the king and the queen and worship Baal and Asherah, and to be like the nations around them and be willing to worship other gods and goddesses. So they're playing both sides, and he won't let them. He says, how long are you going to do that? If he who is God, then you follow him. If Baal is, then follow him. So make up your mind. It's similar to the speech made by Joshua to the people shortly before his death. And he told them, make up your mind, serve one or the other. Now, as for me and my house, we're serving he who is. Now, here we're told that the people did not answer him a word. They're keeping their mouths shut because they are afraid of Ahab and Jezebel. Verse 22, then Elijah said to the people, I only am left a prophet of he who is. Now, he'll discover later that that's not technically accurate. He feels like it's true that he's the only one. He seems to be the only one willing to be up and in the open right now. But I am left the prophet of he who is. But Baal's prophets are 450 men. Let two bulls be given to us. Let them choose one bull for themselves and cut it in pieces and lay it on the wood, but put no fire on it. And I will prepare the other bull and lay it on the wood and put no fire on it. You call upon the name of your God, I'll call upon the name of he who is, and the God who answers by fire, he is God. So he, at God's prompting, proposes a contest. And that's how we always talk about this. This is the contest on Mount Carmel. He proposes a contest where both sides call upon their God to send fire from the sky to burn up the sacrifice. Now, we know that God has done this before. He did it at the inauguration of the tabernacle, and he did it at the inauguration of the temple. And it is going to be proof positive that that God has power. And so all the people answered, it's well spoken. Now, I'm sure that the prophets of Baal start getting nervous because they've never experienced that with their God. They've always set their own fire to their sacrifices. So, Elijah said to the prophets of Baal, choose for yourselves one bull, prepare it first, for you are many, and call upon the name of your God and put no fire on it. So he says, I want you guys to go first. I want you to have all the opportunity in the world to get this right. You choose which bull you want, because I don't want you claiming later that I chose the better bull. You choose which bull, and you just do what you need to do. So they took the bull that was given them, and they prepared it, and they called upon the name of Baal from morning until noon, saying, oh, Baal, answer us! So for 3 hours, from about 9 o'clock in the morning till noon, they're begging Baal to light their fire. But there was no voice, and no one answered. And they limped around the altar that they'd made. So that's the wording, same wording. They're doing that jumping around thing. At noon, Elijah decided to mock them, saying, "Cry aloud, for he's a god. Either he's musing," and the word here in the Hebrew has the sense of chatting. So maybe he's in a conversation somewhere. "Or he's relieving himself," and modern English translators have decided to go with this idea of turning aside, that's the literal Hebrew, to mean going to the bathroom. I'm not on board with that. I think the Septuagint has the better understanding that he was basically negotiating a business deal. So maybe he's chatting, maybe he's turned aside for a business deal, maybe he's on a journey, or perhaps he's asleep and must be awakened. And so they cried aloud and they cut themselves after their customs with swords and lances until the blood gushed out upon them. So they're doing everything that they know to do to get their God to answer with fire, even offering their own blood as a sacrifice. And here is the prophet Elijah mocking them, mocking their God, because their God is not real. And we'll have to stop right there and take up this story next week as God gets us back into his word.